gets raining. All right, everyone, just relax. Welcome to another episode of Swing Thoughts. You know, I know our listeners are always wondering, like, how is this thing going to start today? Will it be serious? Will there be some actual wisdom, or will it just be nonsense? Who knows? We never know. We've been doing this a long time, Tim and I. And as far as planning goes, it's very limited. there's a very limited plan as to what we do here on Swing Thoughts. But we always say welcome. As always, I'm golf spiritual leader. A friend of mine, actually our guest today, told me recently, you should stop saying that in such a... Because I always mock the fact that I say I'm golf spiritual leader. He says, you should stop doing that. I said, why? He said, because you really are golf spiritual leader. I'm like, oh, thanks, pal. But nevertheless, Coach Tim is here. He's a real golf coach and an author. We'll be talking a little bit about Tim's much anticipated. Is it fair to say? It's fair to say much anticipated book that is coming out when, Tim?
Soon.
Coming soon. Tim's it's latest almost, book.
There you go. Coming soon in a world. Yeah, no, it's coming along. I'm just doing last minute little tweaks here and there, and no, I'm feeling really good about it. And but you know what? Well, in terms of the GSL, yeah, you need to own this, pal.
Yeah,
we've been doing this 9 years.
I know
you are it. Own it. Be it.
I was very honored. Tim asked me to write the foreword for his book, and right now, the until any more revisions, Tim's book is called "Getting Unstuck: Six Transformational Practices for Golf Nerds," and that's what we're going with. And I've written little things for friends before, but I really took it seriously that you asked me to write that, and was quite, as the English say, I was quite chuffed.
Ooh.
I was quite chuffed that you allowed me to try and, you know, sort of put some context behind who you were and how much respect I have for you as an individual human and as a golf guy. And I was a little nervous, though, I'll be honest with you, because you're such an accomplished writer. And I'm just a purveyor of nonsense. But I was kind of nervous, like there was going to be like, hey, Howard, do you know what a comma is, you fucking idiot? You know, like, do you have any idea of sentence structure, you moron? But, you know, it came back pretty you had a couple of suggestions, but I was really tickled.
Yeah, well, I would have been remiss not to ask a man who commands the stage as a stand-up comic, you know, I always say a plus handicap broadcaster. You know how to talk. You know how to marshal words. So, yeah, and as GSL, I'd be remiss not to ask you to do it. No, it was really good. And plus the fact you got to tell the Shank story again.
I did. Which it goes back to how we met. Tim was writing an article on me, and we had talked about being golf guys and how much we love the mental side of the game. And I just very briefly, the first time I played with Tim, he must have shanked, like, there was the several hours where in the middle of the round he didn't not shank any irons, and I kept thinking, well, this is who this guy is. I thought, you know, he doesn't throw clubs, he doesn't get him mad. And so 9 years later, we've been doing 250 plus shows. Before we get started with our guest today, we would like to thank our very good friends at TaylorMade. You were telling me when we spoke this week that you've now been fitted for the new driver.
Absolutely. And new wedges and a 7-wood. So, I'm mature enough in my maleness that I can have a 7-wood.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to getting the QI10 in the bag. Just hearing good things. Speaking of hearing, I love the sound of it. So I'm really anticipating this golf season and anticipating it when it arrives on my doorstep.
Yeah, exactly. For the first time ever, TaylorMade Speed comes with the forgiveness and stability of 10K inertia, introducing the all-new QI10 Max Driver. 10K inertia translates to less twisting and impact when and if you miss the sweet spot. Find out more to learn more about the entire family at Seven Woods, Fairway Woods, Drivers. There's several different to choose from. Schedule your fitting where you can experience 10K forgiveness for yourself. Not 10K. Yep. That's a different kind of driver. This is 10K. Experience 10K forgiveness.
Even a plus handicap broadcaster shakes one every once
in
a while.
If you need to experience 10K forgiveness, that's a different show. There's a show there for you. That's a different swing thought. That's tailormadegolf.ca. And of course, this summer, once again, Coach Tim and GSL will be festooned in the finery that is Oscar Bravo.
Yeah, we're proud once again to welcome Oscar Bravo as our apparel sponsor and excited to wear it. Because we know when we go on the golf course, no one will look as resplendent as we do. And we know, of course, no one else will be wearing one because they only make 100 versions of each shirt. Yeah. And it's made of fine Italian fabric. They look good. They breathe well, feel amazing on your skin. So if you want to learn more, check out OscarBravo.com.
All right, let's get to our guest today. As happens with a lot of people I meet, you know, I'm on the range at a, you know, golf facility, and I look over and I see a guy, you know, working pretty hard on his game, hitting the ball. You know, you can sort of tell, like, a well-compressed golf ball has a sound to it. And I see this guy, he's taking a lesson, and it's all in Spanish. And so I'm kind of intrigued by the fact that the lesson's happening in Spanish, and, you know, I'm like a 33 handicap Spanish speaker, but I pick up every so often a couple of words. And then after the lesson is over, this character is continuing to hit balls, and I find out from him that he's only been playing golf for a couple of years, and he's hitting it pretty good. But then I find out that he's so dedicated to the game that he's taken lessons for 2 hours every morning, 5 days a week, for 2 years. I'm like, oh, I know who you are. I'm like, I've met people like you before. And then I had this conversation.
Spirit.
Exactly. And then I have this conversation with him, and I explain that I am golf spiritual leader. And the only thing I say to him that day is I say, listen, man, you got a great golf swing for someone that's only been playing for a short time. But if I could give you any advice, it would be to maybe turn that practice regime around, and rather than practice for 2 hours every day, practice once a week and get on the golf course a bit more. And from that conversation, my friend Gavin Greenwood, who is our guest today, started to listen to our podcast and has become a, STD, a Swing Thoughts devotee. And I welcome him to the show today. Hello, Gavin.
Hi, everybody. Howard, Tim, nice to see you again. I know it's only been a week since we last saw each other, Howard. First time I'm seeing you, Tim, but as I said earlier on, it seems like I know you pretty well now after having listened to your podcast so much.
One of the reasons I wanted to get you on, Gavin, is that Gavin has been an entrepreneur. He's lived in Mexico for 20 years. As you may or may not be able to tell, he's from South Africa. Speaks, I always say that Gavin is like a plus five Spanish speaker. Whoa. And is somebody I look up to, and he's a very bright man. But I want to talk about the business venture that Gavin's involved in, because it involves golf. But before we get there, I sort of described how we met, and what drew you, because you've been good at a lot of different things your whole life, but what drew you to golf and sort of this passion to get better at it a couple years ago in Mexico?
Okay, so I'll be very brief, but so a while back I had an adventure travel company here in the Riviera Maya in Mexico, and I sponsored a hole on the first of the PGA Tour at the El Chameleon Mayacoba. And I never went to the tournament because I really wasn't interested in golf. It seemed to me to be quite boring as a sport. And the second year I wanted to sponsor again, the hole, and the tour director said to me, "Gavin, if you don't come down at least and watch the tournament, we're not going to allow you to sponsor." And I said, "Well, I don't really want to go to the tournament because it's, you know, it's very boring watching golfers." He said, "Well, at least come down to the range and knock some balls with me." And to my surprise, I couldn't connect with any of the balls when I was on the range. And suddenly I felt, man, I need to try this again. And I went back and I still couldn't do it very well. And before I knew it, I was addicted. And I didn't really take it that seriously when the addiction started. But a couple of years later, as you said, Howard, I started taking lessons twice a day, actually 2 years ago. And now I feel like, I mean, it's a drug. I just can't leave it alone. 2 hours is not even enough for me every day. I wish I could be doing it all day, every day. And that's how I got into golf. It's just by accident. The tour director from the PGA said, "You got to come down." And suddenly I felt like I had a syringe in my arm.
And to be fair to Gavin, he got pretty good pretty quickly in terms of being able to connect with the golf ball. But like a lot of people, some of the nuances and the vagaries of the game are still ahead of you. And we've played now. We met each other last fall. We've played together a few times. And what are your feelings about what you've learned from sort of listening to our podcast, and what kind of the things that golf has presented you in the last few months?
I think one of the most encouraging things for me as a novice, and I mean, really, I started when I was 54 years old, 2 years ago, taking golf seriously. What's really encouraging to know is that the same kind of struggles that I'm having, I guess, emotionally, mentally, psychologically, are the same things you two are talking about all the time, and which I think all golfers are struggling with. So, you know, wherever you are on the scale, I guess, whatever your handicap may be, or however many years you've been playing the game, I think everyone struggles with similar kind of psychological, emotional challenges. And I think that's one of the things that I've taken away from the podcast, which has been most encouraging for me. Because, you know, you can get very frustrated not knowing technique and, you know, getting, you know, being a little older when you start, you don't have the same flexibility. It's not as easy to pick up everything that quickly. I'm not a natural sportsman. So it takes me a lot longer to build these things, you know, construct the swing. And there's 100,000 things you've got to think about in those 1.5 seconds when you actually executing. So it sometimes can be a frustrating process. But that's been very encouraging for me. I think that's probably the most important thing for me that I've learned from the two of you.
Well, Gavin, quite obviously, golf has really captivated you. So what is it about the game that really intrigues you? And additionally, what sort of surprised you about golf and your relationship with it?
I think the thing that has hooked me most, I mean, aside from the fact that you know, spend some intimate time with people, you get out to, you know, to be in these beautiful manicured environments, I think the thing that hooked me was the challenge, the emotional, mental, psychological challenge. There's no ceiling to it. You know, every day is a new day. Every ball is a new ball. I remember listening to a podcast. I can't remember her name, that, you know, starting from point A.
Susie Myers.
Every shot's a new shot.
Susie Myers.
That's right. Susie Myers. That's right. And thanks for the book, Howard. I still have it next to my bed. I haven't managed to open it and read it yet, but thank you anyway.
No, it's okay. You don't have these books. They just, you absorb them by osmosis. You don't really have to open them.
By your bedside table there.
No disrespect to Susie, but I think that's the thing that really has hooked me, is that challenge that has no ceiling. You know, you can keep going and you can keep learning. And every day, today I just came back right now from 2 hours in the bunker with my pro. And man, you know, greenside bunker, whole different challenge to fairway bunker. And I love that about it. It really inspires me and it motivates me a lot. I get really, and I've always been that kind of person. I'm not a person that likes maintenance. I don't like doing the same thing over and over and over. I like the challenge of new. And golf definitely puts you in that position every single day.
One of Gavin's superpowers, and we'll find out in a second or two about this business that he started, is that he has been entrepreneurial in spirit, has started some successful businesses in the Riviera Maya. If you've ever been between Playa del Carmen and Tulum, you've passed a place called Rio Secreto, which is a series of underwater rivers that Gavin discovered and developed. And then, you know, like a lot of businesses that he has, he developed and then moved on. The secret that what I've observed as a golfer for you is that Gavin's not frustrated by the game. Like, he's got a normal amount of like, oh, this game is hard. But what Gavin doesn't do is get pissed on the golf course. And we've played a bunch of times now where some days you've had some great breakthroughs, you know. I've given Gavin a couple of small little things, you know. The idea of one of the ones that really resonated with you was the idea of the golf ball isn't the destination, that you're swinging towards something, you know, something we've talked about, Timmy, a lot. And there was a Friday a couple of weeks ago where you played great. You had a great day. And then there was another Friday where it just wasn't working for you that day, but you were the same guy. And if there's a takeaway for our audience, it's how are you when shit goes sour? We're all fine when, you know, you're playing great, but I've observed that about Gavin. And I guess that's probably why you're a good business person, because you're not freaking out when the inevitable pitfalls and the valleys come in any endeavor you're involved in.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I don't know where that comes from, but I definitely do enjoy the game a lot. And I find it quite strange in a way that people don't enjoy it. You know, you're out there on this, in this beautiful environment. You're doing what you want to do.
Yeah.
It's a great sport. What is there not to enjoy?
But Timmy, what I've observed about Gavin, and I think is a really key for our audience today, is Gavin reminds me a little bit of playing with Kent, our friend Ken Osborne, because Kent celebrates great shots. Gavin, whatever level you're at, Gavin is delighted by any great shot that he makes. And that's a very, very important part of enjoying golf for what it is. Do you not agree, Gavin? Like, I've observed you, again, whatever level you're at, where you get so excited about a good shot or a shot well done.
Yeah, I like watching a lot of the top tennis players play, and when they're you know, in the zone and they're playing and they're battling hard, when they get that good shot in, that fist pump really means
exactly
a fist pump to them. They really do mean it when they fist pump. And I like that. I mean, I think it's great. You know, for me and my level, the good shots are far fewer than the not so good shots. So when I do hit those good shots, it shows that it's there somewhere. Yes. You know, after loads and loads of practicing and thinking that it's not possible, it is there. It's inside there somewhere, and it came out. And I'm only too happy to have that happen, because I know I can do that again then.
Well, it says a lot about you, Gavin, in that you're able to kind of instinctively celebrate good things and not get fussed, you know, with the inevitable vagaries of the game. There's actually sports psychology behind that, is that it used to be that you could tell when Tiger hit a good shot. You'd see the camera on him, he'd twirl the club. And that was his way of ingraining good shot. And that's what we do. People who are really good at sports celebrate good stuff. They anchor that feeling. Yeah, I can do it. And you don't make a big deal of the bad shit that's inevitably going to happen, because if you ingrain that, you know, little temper tantrum or whatever, when you're back in the same position again, that's what's going to come up. So, yeah, that's wonderful stuff that you're doing that.
Yeah,
You're so enamored with the game, you started to see it as a business.
Yeah. Before you go, but I was going to say, one of the things I pointed out to Gavin is that, you know, good players will have a, you know, long memory for good shots and a short memory for bad shots. And you know, and not be afraid. Guys especially seem to be, you know, more comfortable, as I told you, freaking out and displaying anger as an emotion than joy as an emotion. So Tim was getting at why I wanted Gavin on the show. Gavin's enamored with golf, and you've been in the travel adventure business for a long time, and you decided to combine both of those into something that's called Secret Links. So why don't you explain what that is and give our audience a flavor of something they might be interested in participating in.
Okay, so I've been living in Mexico now for probably 25 years. And, you know, one of the things that I fell in love with here in Mexico was what we were talking about, not. And I know there are, obviously, you know, Mexico has its social, cultural issues and economic issues and so forth. But the culture here seems to celebrate life in spite of. And this is something that has drawn me to Mexico, and that was partly why I fell in love with it. The Mexican culture loves to celebrate, and any excuse to get together with loved ones, friends, and have a good time celebrating life and celebrating what you have, even though it may be very, very little, in spite of, you know, whatever circumstances you're facing or challenges. Anyway, so I ended up coming to the Riviera Maya and set up two adventure travel businesses here, got out of them a few years ago. And just very recently, a friend of mine, also retired in the States, sold his business. And he's been an avid golfer since, you know, he was a toddler. And he and I were speaking about bringing golfers down here because his now wife and a very, very good friend of mine for the last 15 years has been running and owns this unique, very, very beautiful private luxury villa compound. It's right on the beach on a stretch of Caribbean that is, you know, rivals the best of the beaches we have here in the Cancun all the way down to Tulum region. There are four standalone villas, 2 to 3 stories, ranging from 4 to 6 rooms. On-site gourmet chef and kitchen staff service, concierge service, all the toys from canoes to paddleboards, boogie boards, volleyball nets. It's just a perfect, perfect setting for friends, family to come down and enjoy this region. And we thought, man, why don't we combine this with some of the great golf courses that we have down here? And we've got some really, really beautiful golf courses in amongst the 15 that we have between the Cancun to Tulum area. And Howard, you can speak a lot better to these two golf courses than I can, because I'm still a novice at this. But, you know, these golf courses were designed by Greg Norman, Pete Dye, Trent Jones. And so there's some really, really good, well-designed courses here, challenging, very well looked after. And we decided to combine a stay at the Hacienda with a few rounds of golf. Custom designed. So it could be, you know, 3 rounds of golf, 4 rounds of golf, 5 rounds of golf, repetitive or different golf courses. Excuse me. But the real draw card, I think, is, and great for Canadians, because, you know, your season doesn't end when the snow starts falling. You can just jump on a plane, come down here during winter, enjoy great weather, a beautiful setting as far as accommodation is concerned, luxury service, and you get to play on really, really beautiful golf courses.
Well, that's not, there's two things here, Gav. There's two things. One is the fact that the golf courses are world-class championship golf courses. I've played 2 or 3 of the ones that are on the rotation for Secret Links, and I've also seen the accommodation. But it's not like, listen, a lot of guys listening go to Pebble Beach, and they go to Pinehurst, and they go on these trips, and it's basically kind of luxury accommodations around golf. But this is luxury accommodations and golf and a different culture, a more unique experience. And I think that's kind of the selling point, is it's not just going to play golf with your buddies. And by the way, these places can accommodate 6, 8, 10 people. So you can take a huge group of people if that's what you want to do, and everything is arranged for you. The website is secretlinks.golf. And All I can tell you is, again, I've seen the courses and I've seen the accommodation. It's like nothing I've ever, you know, I get, you know, a lot of guys will go to Cabot, and which is amazing, but it's a very golf-centric experience, whereas this is more of a cultural experience along with golf. Would that be fair?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about the cultural backdrop here. Aside from it being the Mexican Caribbean, which is a unique part of Mexico, you've got the historical backdrop of the Maya culture, which has inhabited this region for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. And if you wanted to get out and go see some of that, have a taste of it, whether it be the Maya culture in transition today, and go visit some of the villages and see some of the stuff they're doing, that's available and easily accessible and safe. You could also go visit some of the very famous ruin sites that are here. And then there's something very unique about the Yucatan Peninsula. Those of you that have visited here that know something about its limestone base know that, you know, over hundreds of thousands of years through erosion, all of these sinkholes formed and these underground tunnels and caverns, rivers. So we have over 5,000 sinkholes of all different sizes, and you can access them by snorkeling, diving, swimming, walking. Howard, you went onto the Secret River or the Rio Secreto experience. It's a 33-kilometer long system of underground tunnels and caves and so forth. You can walk, swim, and so forth. So this whole backdrop does make the golfing experience a little different and unique.
Yeah, different than any that I've heard of. Timmy, let's wrap it up. What's your last question?
Well, I was just going to say, like, I'm one-dimensional, so I just want to know about the golf courses. I mean, I've been to Mexico a couple of times, but I haven't. I think I played there like 40 freaking years ago. What if there's any kind of, you know, what do you see and what do you experience on these golf courses in terms of, I don't know, like what's around you when you play in terms of nature, and what do you see? What do you experience?
Jungle, lots of jungle.
Yeah. Does that mean mosquitoes?
Yeah. No, not at all. No.
Scary snakes or nice little critters.
No, there's nothing scary. I'll just say that these guys, I've played a few of these courses. I played one of them. I played it 30 times. PGA Riviera Maya. And they're unique. Excuse me. They're not easy, but they're beautiful. They're world class, like top of the line golf courses. When I say jungle, it's not like Florida. There's water on these courses, but mostly it's fairway, transition area, you've lost your ball. So I played a Birostar, there's a PGA Riviera Maya, and there's a couple others on the rotation. But I just wanted the Gavin to just sort of wrap it up by saying, you know, it's the experience along with golf that will be so unique for people if they take advantage of this.
Yeah, I agree totally with you. And again, you know, all of these packages are custom designed. So, you know, you can come down with friends, couples, however you want to, you know, cobble it together. And, you know, you don't have to play golf every day. You can go deep sea fishing one day. You could maybe just take a rest in this beautiful accommodation nestled right there on the beach, secluded beach, beautiful blue Caribbean sea
exactly.
Right in front of you. So yeah, you can put it together as you wish.
All right, senor.
To make sure of a good time.
That was great. Secretlinks.golf is how you find out more about it. And great to have you on the show after you becoming a fan. Now you're one of the guests on an episode. Look how you've come full circle, young man.
Yeah, and I actually want to hear you guys transition out of this using your Espanol.
Well, he's intimidating, but I'll just say, muchas gracias, mi amigo. Hasta luego, hasta pronto, pronto próxima. Habla pronto.
Muchas gracias, Tim. Muchas gracias, Howard. Hasta luego.
Salud. All right, buddy. Yeah, he's great. Right. He's the best. He's a +5 Spanish speaker. It's very intimidating. Thanks, Gav. Remember that part where I said we would say goodbye and you leave? This is that part now. Competition in other
places. You sounded like low single-digit Spanish speaker.
No. No, I'm no good. I've gotten better, though. He really helped me. He coached me through some Spanish. You know, I don't know what. I just wanted to get the guy on because he's you know I've been down there so long. And one of the many people I should say, but there's a few individuals where you meet and you go, oh, I see why that guy's been successful. Because a lot of people say they want to get better at golf. You and I, you experience it every day. I've seen it all over, you know, coaching different people. But very few people are committed to getting better at golf. Only because it's so hard.
Well, I was surprised that, did you say it was like 5 days a week for 2 hours?
2 hours every morning. 2 hours every day.
I can barely stay focused for 20 minutes.
No, I know. It's a lot. That's why I told him when I first met him, I said, dude, this is great, but.
Yeah.
And I'm the most obsessed golfer I've ever met. But you've got to figure out, because, and so now he's doing other things. He's practicing his short game, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, when people first get into golf, and when they find out how hard it is, I think it discourages a lot of people.
Oh, 100% it does. Yeah. 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 You get intimidated, and you, I don't know how many times you've heard, you get in a conversation with someone about golf and they ask you about your own game and what you do, and they say, oh, you wouldn't want to play with me.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm crappy.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just hear that all the time. But, you know, just the one of the core things that I picked up in the last, say, 5, 6, 7 years or so is that you make most of your progress on the golf course.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, raking over ball after ball, hitting, you know, 27 irons in a row.
It's very similar to learning a language because, well, because golf is a language. So I've been at it a year now. I've, you know, what I just said to him in Spanish was, you know, talk to you soon in three different ways. But it's discouraging. Like, I made a bunch of progress, just like golf. And then you get to a point where you hit, you know, a bit of a plateau, and then you have to start conjugating in the past tense, and you're thinking, why do I want to bother? And then you sort of think, okay, I'll keep trying. And it's analogous to golf because you're going to, we all do. I mean, and we all do in a season of golf, we all have those weeks where we're just like, we can't find it. And he's encouraged me to keep on going in Spanish because he's been doing it for 25 years. The thing is, I've learned most people, when it comes to learning another language, they just give up because it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you kind of go, okay, I know enough to order a beer and a taco. You know, what else do I want to say? And I'm like too stubborn. I want to order a beer and a taco in the past tense, in the future. I want to be able to say I did it last week. So a couple times we've played golf and he's said, okay, let's switch to Spanish. And it's intimidating because he's so good at it. But, you know, I kind of muddle my way through just like we do in golf. And I often think the same thing you just said, like, oh, you know, like you wouldn't want to talk to me because I only know so many things, yeah, you know. Yeah. But I guess it's, again, I'm saying the same thing. It's analogous and then you just keep trying to do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that's you, man. I mean, you're the guy who took some time off from golf and became a pilot. And then, oh, yeah, learned how to ride a unicycle.
Not at the same time, by the way.
No, not at the same time, but still.
I don't know what that is. Like, I think, like, you know, I mean, some people would say it's determined, but it's also a bit obsessive.
Mm.
But anyway, let's get back to some other stuff. So that's Gavin, secretlinks.golf. How are you, by the way? How you been?
I'm good. Yeah.
You're teaching
good.
A lot?
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's been really busy. It's really been nice. The business is really built through the season. Had a lot of good success with a lot of players. It's interesting. You just might find this kind of interesting. Every once in a while, there's a student, if you will, who struggles with something. So I have this woman I've been coaching, and she, you know, took 7 lessons. So she's a novice. She's in her 70s. Took 7 lessons for her to get the ball in the air. And then now we're into our second tranche, if you will, of lessons. And then she was starting to hit the ball like dead left all the time. And then I had this other, a younger fellow who hit the ball dead, basically shanking. And even though I have a lot of experience in that particular shot,
mm-hmm.
but the thing is, what I'm getting to is that when they continue to struggle, I almost have this panic that, you know, how come I can't provide this instant fix?
I can imagine.
But I know I know that I'm just succumbing to my own ego because I'm not in their body. And that's the thing I have to keep in mind, that in coaching, it's not about downloading the information to them that they can apply like a Band-Aid to fix it. It's about how can they get a sense of their own experience and help guide them through that experience so they can eventually self-coach themselves. Because that's, to me, the ultimate.
You know, it's funny you brought that up, because I've often thought about that. Like, you know, when I give, you know, my little lessons to people like Gavin and my brother and other people on the range that I meet, it's usually to better players or people that have a clue. But I thought about you in this context, actually, what it must be like when you have a complete beginner who's given you money that they earned to teach them how to do this thing, and seven sessions can go by without any success. How, like you just said, like, it's not just your ego, but, you know, it's human nature to think, well, shouldn't I be able to fix this problem?
Yeah, and that's the thing that I come to, I find myself in that place every once in a while. And I realize, look, it's not my job. If they come in shanking, success is not they leave and they've cured their shank. It's that they now are able to have a better idea of what they're doing.
Right.
See, I'm not in their body.
But Timmy, it's understandable you'd think that, because if I gave you a certain amount of dough, I'm kind of, there's a sort of a transactional expectation that there be a result. But unfortunately, in golf, that's not always the case.
Yeah, that is it. And you're right, that it's a really kind of knife edge to ride. And you're right. You know, people have given me, you know, money to help them. Mm-hmm. And there's certain things, like there's certain things. Like, one of the things I pulled out kind of my bag of tricks with the fellow hitting it, shanking and hitting it right, was something that you told me about in terms of putting your butt against, in essence, a wall and swinging like that, because it was so obvious in the video we're taking down the line that he was just jumping off his right side,
getting closer to the ball.
So, so he moves out towards the ball, exposes the hosel to the club. And so you try certain things like that. There's lots of times where it's be like a teacher, but it's really interesting. What makes the most difference is when this is a Fred Shoemaker thing. It was when you empower the student.
Yes.
So for the, where we started to make progress with the female student was, okay, I said, let's do one of three things. You choose. You can hit the ball to the left, you can hit semi straight, or to the right. You choose, and you tell me which one you're going to do. And so she started she said she can hit the ball to the right, and she started to do it.
Wow.
And then she started to hit some, you know, she intended to hit it to the right, but she hit it kind of straight. And then I said, let's hit it left. And then she starts to get an idea of what's actually happening.
Yeah, exactly.
She gets a sense of the club face, the club path, her own body. And it's the same thing with the young man who's been hitting it to the right. I say, I've got a small caliber handgun, and it's pointed at your foot. And if you don't hit this to the left, you're going to start missing your big toe.
Wow. And I mean, that's one way to do it. And did he do it?
Yeah, he did.
Of course.
So it's kind of providing that environment. But like I say, as a coach, every once in a while, I just admit, I get this, like, it's like this little ego panic. Oh, my God.
Yeah, but I can see that, man.
Again, it's not about me, but that's the thing. It's not about
me. No, but in this world you're occupying, I mean, I spent 6 weeks with my older brother, or longer, actually, 6 or 7 weeks, and gave him lots of lessons. And, I mean, there's no outcome I'm expecting other than I hope to help him, but he's not paid me for it. So if it doesn't work, well, you know, too bad. Anyway, I'm glad to hear about that. So one of the I was in Mexico for the better part of 2.5 months or so. And in March, there was so the Canadian Tour, PGA Tour Canada, and PGA Tour Latin America have combined to become something called the PGA Americas Tour. And it happened to be at the course that I was a member of for the winter that we referred to with Gavin, called PGA Riviera Maya. And it's a tough, tough golf course. I don't know what the slope is, but it's not rated high enough. And so they're having a professional golf tournament there. And these kids are, they're kids that have status on the Corn Ferry Tour, kids that have status on the Asian Tour. A couple of the kids in the field are ranked in the top 500 in the world. They've played on the DP.
These are young adults, right?
These are young adults. Kids compared to us. But, you know, I would say, like, young, there would be guys there in their early 20s to guys there in their mid-30s. But I'm just trying to give you a scope that this isn't like a Florida mini tour event, which, by the way, also has great players. This was like, you know, like AAA ball of professional golf. And it was run like a professional golf tournament. In fact, I ended up hanging around there for the week because the tickets were free and I had nothing else to do. And I talked to a couple of the guys that work for the tour, and I was sort of give me some perspective. And he said, well, you know, some of these guys have played in tour events, including, I should get this guy in the show. He's something else. Guy's name is Edward Olson, and I was there. This tournament starts on Monday with the qualifier. There's 85 guys that have come in from all over the world who have different statuses on different tours trying to qualify for this tour, for this tournament. So I'm on the range Saturday, and this guy's walking by me. I say hi. He's looking for the water. I say, well, there's a cooler over there. That's where I usually keep it. And he saw me hit. Timmy, I swear, he saw me take two swings. I was practicing, as I do. I take two swings. We start talking. He goes, hey, what are you doing Monday? I go, I don't know. He goes, you want a caddy for me?
Wow.
I said, sure.
That's awesome.
Guy's 35 years old, played on the PGA, played professionally for 10 years, had a couple starts on the PGA Tour, a couple starts on the Corn Ferry, played on a bunch of different mini tours. Couldn't have been a better guy. 35 years old, not a kid. Very, very engaging, lots of fun. And I carried his bag on the qualifier. Now, I've been to tour events, as have you, but I've never actually been in the game at it with these guys. Like, in the game, like, what should we hit? What's the green going to do? That kind of thing. But also seeing how these guys hit golf balls up close. I don't know. I said to somebody after, I said, I was both encouraged and discouraged. Because nothing we do, nobody that I know, from Charlie Fitzsimmons to the best guys that play at my course, Mike Dinner, Paul Gortner, the best guys that I play with at the mid-am level, Garrett Rank, none of them hit the golf ball like these kids do. It was just something. Really, really something.
So I got to jump in and ask a really mature, important question.
How far?
So did you haul around one of those big honking tour bags that looks like it has a microwave in it?
No, it it was. In fact, I said to him, I said, here's what I said, dude, I can't. He had a regular golf bag.
Yeah.
I said, I can't carry your bag. It's 1,000 degrees here. He goes, I don't want you to carry the bag. I just want you to walk around and caddy for me.
Cool.
So I said, okay, I can do that. But I ended up carrying it for about half the time because I wanted to take some of the stress off this kid. So he's 35. Another kid in the group's 25 from Las Vegas. And then there was a Canadian kid who was probably around 25 who hit the golf ball further than I've ever seen anybody hit it in my life. There was a green. It's a short par 4, 360 yards. The other guys all lay up because they didn't want to go for the green. This guy went for the green. He hit it on the fringe.
Yikes.
There was a 245-yard par 3. My guy hits 3-iron. The other guy hits 3-iron. This guy hits 5-iron to the back of the green. Anyways, it was great. I don't want to bore you all with the details of it, except to say
I think it's really what you're bringing up is such an interesting point. I mean, it's like reminds me of the story of when Mike Weir, I think he won a Canadian Tour event, and then he qualified for the Canadian Open. And at Glen Abbey, they put him beside Nick Price. And he just heard the sound, and it was so different. And I think that what you're talking about is not only the, it's the sound, it's the divot pattern, it's the trajectory. Like, I got to think this kid you're talking about hits it like a mile in the air, right?
Yeah, it took me a while. Like, my guy, Edward, he hit his 3-wood 290. Okay. 290. But the kid, the masher, I called him the masher. The masher kid, on the first hole that we played, is a short par 4, like 420, into a wind. The two normal guys hit 3-woods or whatever. This kid throws the ball on the ground and then just pushes the golf ball into the earth, squeezing it, a low bullet. I'm like, what the fuck was that?
Scream in pain?
Yeah, I look over and he's putting his club away. It's a 1-iron. But he doesn't even tee it up. He just puts it on the ground. Anyway, 84 guys, 85 guys for 6 spots. Minus 4 was the lowest score. 2 under went to a playoff. And here's what the 3 guys in my group shot. The kid from Las Vegas shot 73, 25-year-old. Really good player. Had it going on the first 9 holes. Was 3 under, and then it's a very tough golf course. My guy shot 78. Same thing. Played well the first 9 holes. Shit the bed in the back. The kid that hit it further than I've seen anyone up close hit it, shot 83. Because, and I'm not exaggerating, when I say it's a very difficult golf course, so I've already described at what level of professional golf this is. 6 over par made the cut.
Wow.
4 under par won it. Sorry, went to a playoff. But I would say the average score was probably mid-70s on this golf course.
My golly,
the PGA official that I spoke to, because I came and watched the play a couple days, hung out on the range one day, and then this is after I had caddied, but I talked to this PGA tour official, and he said, this is the toughest golf course these guys will play all year.
Wow.
It's hard to describe wide stuff. It's just because it's at sea level, 7,300 yards, so it plays 7,800 yards. Mm-hmm. And it's just very, very difficult. There's no, and again, like the guys in my group that we were, it was a long round too, and kept saying how tough the course was, how they were surprised by how tough it was. Mm-hmm. But it was a great experience for me.
Yeah, so before we leave the segment, I want to ask you, how involved did you get in, say, shot selection, confirming reads, helping with yardage, or and sort of on top of that, how emotionally invested were you?
I wanted him to do well from an emotional. I mean, I thought it would be cool if he qualified and I caddied for him. But to answer your first question, I was very involved because he knew I was a good I was a good player. I have a cute story about it. So after we'd met on Saturday, I said I'm not 100% sure. I took the day off work that day. I was going to work. I said I'm not 100% sure. I said let me talk to my partner in this show that I do, and I'll. He said, well, I'm going to be over on the putting green. Just come over and tell me before you leave. So I talk to Fred and I say, hey, I'm going to do this. He says, yeah, go ahead. So I go over the putting green and I said, I think I can do it. He says, well, you want to have a little putting contest? I said, sure. Sure, let's have
a good guy.
He's a great guy. He says, have a putting contest. And he said, I'll give you a couple shots. I go, you don't need to give me shots. He goes, oh, no, I do. He said, I do. And he was right. He gave me 2 shots. We played 18 holes of like par 2 all over the green. And he beat me by 4. And why? Because he just sank more putts than me. Like, I'm not talking about 5-footers. He gave me a great tip, by the way. But he sank like 12-footers all the time. But he knew I was good. Back to your question about how invested was I. I read almost every putt for him. I told him what clubs I would hit. I said,
"Oh, you knew the course."
I knew the course. I also knew the greens way better than he did, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I watched him on the range warm up, and I said, "You know, what's your 7-iron distance?" And so when we had a number, I'd say, "Okay, well, it's 170. It's playing 185. This is the trouble. You know, what do you hit? What do you hit 185?" The only time he got a little bit, I wouldn't say mad. He didn't get mad at me. What I would do is, like, he'd say, "What do you think?" And I'd say, "It's going to break a ball right to left." "What do you think?" I'd say sometimes. He'd go, "Well, I think it's this." And so one time he said right away, "I think it's this." And I was like, "Oh, okay." I wasn't sure, but I was pretty, I got a sense it was wrong. And sure enough, he goes and hits it. He misses it. And as we're walking to the next hole, I said, "By the way, not for nothing, but this time we were joking around. I said, I should have said something because I didn't think you were ready. Because listen, dude, I'd rather you told me the truth. Don't fucking, don't hold back what you think because you think I know better." He says, I want to know what you think or I wouldn't have asked you. So that was it.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
I want to ask you just one, maybe this is the last question about this particular subject, but in terms of, you know, the things that we talk about on this show about, you know, the mental aspects of the emotional parts, was there anything that you observed in him that was a little bit different than you'd seen, and you could kind of go, "Hey, yeah, this is kind of cool. I'm learning from this."
He had such a great attitude. He's been around. Like, he played at UNLV. Here's what I observed. He's played high level golf for such a long time that he's very good at playing high level golf.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like.
Oh, I know exactly.
He's played,
what you mean.
Like, yep. He's played on the PGA Tour. He had Corn Ferry status. Played at UNLV. Played golf with Ricky. Like, oh, he told me some great stories. He's played golf with a bunch of really, really good players. So he was very comfortable. Like, you know, you could imagine playing golf with this guy, and you know, you could sort of keep up with him for a few holes. You know what I mean? Like, his ball striking was so much better than mine, but I could see playing golf with him. But I don't think I could imagine myself playing high-level golf with him because he's just been doing it his entire life. So I don't really have a great answer for you except to say I did notice two things. One, even when he missed it, it was missed with such ferociousness, like he didn't steer shit. None of them did. They also all, like, I know we always talk about, you know, it's not how good your good shots are, it's how good your misses are. With me, it was more like I couldn't believe how good their consistent ball striking was, how compressed everything was. But the second thing I'll tell you, and it turned into a great experience for me, was he had a chip, and this is off a tight lie, to an elevated green. He had one, and one of the other players did a long par. This was the long par three. They both missed the green. So the other guy goes first, and he hits the shot that most of us would hit, which is kind of like a bump and run, 15 feet past the hole. Just get it on. Take your bogey if you have to. Just don't have to have the same shot again type of shot. But my guy, I look over, and he opens up his lob wedge flat on the ground. So, this is off a tight lie, not a fluffy, rough lie. Off the ground, swings hard as shit at it, hits it to 3 feet. You know, I give him a fist bump, and he goes up and he makes the putt. And we're walking to the next tee, and I say to him, "Dude," I said, "that was pretty impressive." He goes, "You think so?" I said, "Yeah," because the other shot I could hit, but I said, "I don't have that shot." He goes, "Oh, yeah, you do, blah, blah, blah." And I start telling him that those are shots amateurs would never try. So we finished the round. We're having lunch. He buys me lunch. And he wants to give me money. This is the other thing. He wants to give me some money for caddy. I go, "Buddy, this was a great experience for me. I don't need your 50 or 75 bucks. Whatever you're going to give me isn't necessary. I enjoy this day." I said, "But I tell you what, if you're not," because we were bagged, man. I said, "I tell you what, if you've got time, would you give me a little like lesson on that shot and some chipping?"
Oh, I love that. Love that.
Well, this fucking kid, Tim, spent 45 minutes with me. giving me his sort of pro tour, how he, what's his chipping philosophy, including that shot, which I still wouldn't try, to be honest with you. I know how to hit it now, but I wouldn't try it under pressure. But he gave me a couple things, and he watched me chip after being there all day, and it's hot, and we're tired. But that kid gave me 45 minutes of his time, and it was priceless in terms of what I learned that day about how to pitch the ball better under pressure, and it was great.
I got to ask, is it where you sort of slide the bounce along the grass and sort of collect the ball?
How he hit
versus
it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, imagine hitting a bunker shot off a bare lie. He just, it's part of it is the setup, but part of it is having the courage off that lie to let the club pass your hands.
There you go, yeah.
And that was like, and I could do it, and I could do it for funsies. Oh, and the other thing, okay, the other thing he did, showed me how to do, is how light his grip was, and how I've started doing this, how light his grip was on all shots around the green. So, and I was hitting, so the practice we were doing was off really, really tight lies. Because everybody can hit a pitch shot off a fluffy, rough lie. You know, it's not that hard. I don't think most people find that intimidating. But off a tight lie, that's the one we all, you know, tend to scull or hit fat. Excuse me. So he told me two things I can pass on. One is put it way back in your stance. Way back. So that in that situation, you guarantee you're going to hit the ball first. And he said, lighten your grip. Because it just, then it becomes like, just like a little mini shot. Whereas you've coached people who have had the chipping yips. And they are, it's tension.
Oh, yeah, yeah. White knuckle time. Yeah.
So that was my day.
Next time we play the sixth at Leith Field near the roads there, you'll have to show me that shot.
Oh, yeah. No, you mean the...
Is it six or seven?
The par three?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that right by the roads there?
Yeah, that's right by the road. That's seven.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, though. It was a great experience.
That is awesome. Yeah.
And it was, I kind of came away thinking, we all are hitting the ball, especially the guys in our age group, we're hitting it as good as we're going to hit it. Like, that's it for us. We're not going to hit it like these guys. And the problem with golf is every once in a while we think we do. And we just don't. We don't.
Yeah.
You know? I don't hit. There's not one ball I hit from January 28th until last Friday that did anything like these guys hit a golf ball. Yeah, I hit it pretty good, but not like this. Not like this at all.
Yeah, well, that's awesome to get to see it up close and personal, if you will.
Oh, yeah, I was definitely the oldest guy caddying that day. So it was pretty funny. And like, again, I couldn't have found a better guy because he was taking it seriously, but, you know, he was a character, really good guy.
Yeah, well, he sounds like somebody we got to get on the podcast.
Dude, you'd love it. You would love this guy. It's a real character. All right, well, there you go. There you have it. You have anything you want to pass on? We are officially starting our season next week.
Exciting. Yeah. Well, it's Masters Week.
Woo-hoo. Coming up. Yeah.
Holy week for golfers.
Yeah. Well,
it's going to be really interesting. I'll be brief. I finally did see the first episode of Full Swing.
Yeah. What'd you think?
And it was really interesting, you know, the storyline of, you know, Liv versus PGA and Rory. And, it'll be really interesting to see, again, how that plays out, especially when the defending champion of the Masters is on the Live Tour now. So it'll be really interesting to see how all that stuff, Brooks, DJ, Cam Smith, you know, Patrick Reed, another defending champ, you know, they'll see how that all works out.
I'm looking forward to it. When do you anticipate... like Blue Springs, Glen Cairn, all those Club Link courses. When will they? Is it going to be next weekend? Because I know the weather right now as we're recording this is absolute shit. It's like 6 degrees and raining. But by next week, apparently, it's supposed to be like 16. So are courses about to open around here, you think?
My sources, my very carefully cultivated sources are saying third week of April.
The third week.
Yeah.
Really?
Right away. Yeah.
You want to hear something weird?
Yes.
I can't even believe I'm saying this. Like, it's going to, and again, I know how lucky I am to have been able to go away all winter and do my job and golf a lot. It's going to sound so strange.
Can I hate you? Can I tell you I hate you already?
Yeah, you're going to fucking hate this. Because it's April 3rd, and I need a break. I need a break from golf for a couple weeks. I do. Yeah, I just do.
I get it. You know,
I'm sore. My elbow hurts. My back is sore.
I feel like I'm right back in high school. You know, there's the president student council. He's a quarterback of the football team. Goes out with the most beautiful girl in grade 12. You know, yeah, you're that guy. I fucking hate you.
Yeah, well, that wasn't me. But I get it. Listen, man, I've been so lucky. I spent between the fall session and all winter, I got to be away for 15 weeks and do my show, do this show, and then when it was over, go outside and be not cold. And I get it. I don't know that I could do that again because I really didn't. You know, it's got some downside. I miss my kids, my friends, my family, my dog. But as far as a guy that got to do all the golfing you'd ever want to do, yeah, it was pretty great.
Yeah, and can I ask you real quick?
Yeah, man.
It looks like you didn't pick up because of your lovely, it's not a bucket style hat, is it, that you wear? It's more like a
Tilly hat.
A Tilly hat. There yeah. you go. So you haven't added to your sun damage.
No.
But briefly, tell me how the experiment, if you will, went with tightening up that turn. You're talking about that. Remember, we shared some videos. Yep.
I can tell you, I worked pretty hard, as you can imagine, on my golf swing. And, you know, I'm swinging it as good. I mean, you know, I'm swinging a golf club right now as good as I can. I had a lot of good rounds there. I had a couple of things that have never happened to me in golf before. I had four rounds of golf where I made four birdies in four rounds. Ooh. I had in three of those rounds of golf, I made three birdies in a row three times. I've never done that. But as far as the my actual golf swing, yeah, I mean, it's in a pretty good spot. But
it's like a tighter turn, right?
A little tighter turn. Way tighter turn. And you know, I don't know if I'm hitting it any longer than I. It's hard to tell because the golf ball, because of the heavy air, the humidity, and the fact that it's right at sea level, the golf ball, I would kill a drive, and it might go like 253. Yeah. Whereas, you know, it's not about distance, but yeah, I worked really hard at it, and I enjoyed it, and had lots of fun. And I had some horrible rounds too, like just awful, but didn't care.
Nice. Well, you're the GSL. You have perspective. Yeah. You got that. You got that 10,000-er mile high view.
Let's be looking forward to.
Yeah.
Tim's new book, Getting Unstuck. Sorry, I'm tired now. Getting Unstuck. Yes, six transformational. I have it written in my scribble. Six transformational, is that it?
Yes.
Six transformational practices for golf nerds. Coming soon.
Yes.
Timothy.
Through Amazoni, yes.
Can you ballpark it? Labor Day, when is it?
Before the early bird.
That's right.
Yeah, oh, golly. I don't know. It depends on how fast this this lovely person who's going to format it and bump it up onto Amazon, how fast she can do it. She has other priorities, you know. She has, like, real published authors and stuff.
Whatever.
Well, I'm a published author,
You are
too.
A published it's just, author.
It's just been 30 years since I published a book, so we'll see.
No, it hasn't. Yeah. You published the revision to the Mo Norman book.
Oh, yeah, that's right, in 2017. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the first edition that
and
came out.
Does she have any other Golf Ontario Hall of Famers? No.
No.
It's bullshit.
No, to say, do you know who you're dealing with here?
Exactly. I should call
do
it.
Do you know who I am?
Thanks again to Gavin from secretlinks.golf. Thanks to TaylorMade. I'm heading in there next week to pick up my stuff.
Nice.
And I'm excited to hit the driver. Because I'll tell you what, man, the last couple of years, I've really loved the stealth drivers. I was really hitting mine. Mm. And I know that from hitting the QI10, it's, like you said, it's got a cool sound to it. And it's just familiar enough. But I definitely picked up a couple miles an hour. And as I always tell people, like, you know, the difference between stealth to this, you know, is like a continuum of a little bit of an increase per club. But man, if you're using a sim or you haven't used a TaylorMade product, you got to try this stuff because it definitely will give you more pop in your bat, as they say. QI10 series of drivers, go to TaylorMadeGolf.ca. And of course, we always thank our clothing sponsor, Tim.
OscarBravo.com. Yeah, check them out.
Yeah, they look good, man. All right. O'ConnorGolf.ca, HumbleAndFredRadio.com, and Swing Thoughts. We'll be back for our brand new season. Season 9 kicks off in 1 week's time.
You get a shiver in the dark. It's raining in the park. But meantime, sound of the river, you stop and you hold everything. A band is blowing Dixie, double fall time.